Hi, this is ETF.com's Exchange Traded Fridays podcast, a weekly podcast covering developments in the ETF industry. My name is Sumit Roy, and I'm senior analyst for ETF.com.
And I'm Jeff Benjamin, wealth management editor here at ETF.com. And also want to put in a little plug for our advisor center at ETF.com. We've got a lot going on there for financial advisors and RIAs and intermediaries, and we're building it out. We're building it out for you folks, so check it out.
Absolutely. And this week, we're talking with Jeff DeMasso, who is the editor and founder of the Independent Vanguard Advisor. Jeff, great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking all things Vanguard.
Let's start with the Buckley announcement or the Vanguard announcement. Were you surprised to learn of his resignation?
Short answer is yes. I mean, I don't think anybody was really saw this coming. But not just the fact that he's leaving, but the nature of the resignation and the nature of the communication about it from Vanguard was a bit odd, and we can spend some time pulling that apart. But just that they said Tim Buckley's departing at the end of the year, and now we're going to go look for his successor rather than having that person already lined up was unusual from Vanguard. Usually they kind of put that together in one communication piece for people.
Right. Why do you think he's leaving, if you had to think on it? And I'm sure you've thought about it a little bit.
It really is kind of speculation. We have not heard anything at this point. Buckley in his LinkedIn post said it's time for others now. So he's not even really hinting at what may be motivating him to leave. If we take the generous view, it's that, as you said, he's been there for over three decades. He spent the last 6 years as CEO, and that hasn't been an easy 6 years, leading a giant organization through COVID. We'll probably talk about ESG and some of the pressure they've had from both the left and the right of that issue. And he's also, let's be honest, he's pulled down a nice salary. We don't quite know. Vanguard doesn't give us transparency on that, but we can be sure he's pulling down a very respectable income, and he's done that for years now. So maybe it's just time for him to step away from that role. And let's kind of take that as the generous view of it.
So, Jeff, like you said, Buckley, he's been with Vanguard for over three decades. He was chief investment officer for four of those years and CEO for six of them. Can you talk about his legacy? How is he going to be remembered?
It's natural that we compare any Vanguard CEO to the founder, Jack Bogle. But I don't think that's quite fair or necessarily even appropriate. I mean, Bogle was your classic charismatic founder who really told the story, played the media, grew the following. I mean, there's Bogleheads, right? It's a group that's endured beyond him. But Vanguard today is a giant organization. And it needs some professional management, you could argue. And so having someone in Buckley's mold, he was a Harvard MBA, might be appropriate. So if we step back and think about his legacy, on the one hand, he knocked it out of the park, right? I mean, they grew assets something like 80%. When we're talking going from 4 trillion to 8 trillion in assets under management, maybe 9 trillion if you include the assets overseas. I mean, that is just phenomenal growth. And it's done in the face of very stiff competition, right? iShares, Fidelity, Schwab, everybody competes with Vanguard on price now, at least when it comes to index funds and ETFs. They also saw growth of the advisor program, the personal advisor services. I think it tripled in size. It's now something like $300 billion in assets. I mean, those numbers are just remarkable. And they're really only kind of normal in the world that is Vanguard and maybe BlackRock. So in that way, you could say Buckley did it great. And he was riding the wave already. I mean, coming in, Vanguard was already taking in assets coming out of the global financial crisis. And he kept the ship moving in the right direction. On the other hand, and we can talk about, some issues that Vanguard faces, but technology and service has been a constant issue for Vanguard. It's really become an Achilles heel for the company. They also, moved in and out of certain markets and certain initiatives. Under his guidance, they were moved into China and then moved out of China. They moved into the Net Zero Asset Manager Alliance and then back out of it in pretty short order. So there were a few places where you might say they stepped wrong. And again, if we take the positive view, maybe they corrected those mistakes in relatively short order for such a large organization.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Greg Davis, the chief investment officer who stepped into the additional role of president, company president at Vanguard, on the announcement that Buckley was going to eventually resign. Just to, for context, Tim Buckley is 55 years old, which anybody paying attention would kind of assume this isn't the end of his career. And Greg Davis is 53. I don't think of the four CEOs at Vanguard, any of them have come from outside the company. Vanguard, in their announcement, they said that the search would look inside and outside the company. What are your thoughts on Greg Davis? And beyond Greg Davis, what are your thoughts on a potential replacement if it's not Greg Davis?
Yeah, I think Davis has got to be the front runner. As you said, Vanguard has always hired internally for this role, and they tend to be pretty insular. I also suspect that he was the contingency plan. You know, the if Tim Buckley gets hit by a bus, who steps into the role tomorrow? It would probably be Greg Davis. He's been promoted to president. That was a stepping stone for Tim Buckley before he became CEO. Also, in a lot of Buckley's comments around his departure, he's really played up, you know, training the next generation of leaders and looking forward to see how those leaders grow Vanguard. So that would kind of all hint to it being an internal candidate. And again, it seems like Davis is that person. Plus, if it's not going to be Greg Davis, it's going to be, let's call it, interesting to see how he as president and whoever the new CEO is coexist and how they divide responsibilities and roles. That said, you know, of course, Tim Buckley's got to say positive things about his team as you leave. It's generally how you go if you're going to play nice. And if it's not, if it is Davis, again, I don't understand why they're making the announcement the way they are, where they're, you know, it's 10 months until Tim Buckley said he's leaving. And they said, all right, thank you, Tim, for your service. We're going to go look for your replacement. You know, why not wait 3 months? Spend the time finding that replacement, deciding who it's going to be, and then making that announcement. And maybe you might say, okay, they want to see how Davis does in this president's role, but he's been there for 25 years. He's been CIO for years. Like, he's a known commodity. I don't know what you're going to learn over the next, whatever, 3, 5, 9 months that you don't already know. And that kind of starts making me think maybe they really are going to hire someone from outside. You know, if I was going to stir the pot, I'd note that in January, the global head of iShares, Salim Ramji, left BlackRock. I don't know if he would be in the running, but that seems like a potential candidate, or at least someone who would have overlapping experience with Vanguard and the marketplace. So again, I mean, short story would be Buckley's got to be in the running. He's got to be towards the top of the list. But just this weird announcement of, you know, not lining up the successor, particularly when they've got 10 months and they've got this runway of, you know, if we waited until June and they put it together in one package announcement, we all might still be surprised that Buckley was leaving, but at least we would know who's going to run this $8, $9 trillion asset manager in the next year. And it's just kind of an unusual spot to be in now.
Jeff, obviously there's a lot of things to like about Vanguard. We know they got great products. They have extremely low fees. But what are some of the challenges Vanguard is currently facing? You touched on how, you know, there's issues with technology. I've heard some people complain about the company's website and customer service. Are they working to address those issues? And do you see any other issues that people should know about?
I'm glad you started off with the things that Vanguard does great, because I often come across as this just negative critic on Vanguard. I do love Vanguard. I invest in their funds. I write a newsletter about them. I'm passionate about the company. But yeah, they do have some issues facing them. Tech and service are clearly the big ones. As I said, they've become an Achilles heel. They have been putting money into it. They've improved the app. The website has a new redesign. I've heard kind of mixed reviews from users on that. Some people like it, some people don't. I think that's going to happen anytime you redesign a website. But there's still clearly lingering tech issues. For example, at the beginning of the year, you know, statements were delayed 8, 9, 10 days, just kind of pointing when Vanguard or when Fidelity and Schwab were able to kind of close the books in a day or two. So just kind of pointing to all things aren't necessarily quite sorted out on the tech side. I still hear from subscribers having long wait times on hold when they're trying to get in touch with Vanguard. So again, that's the big one. We've probably said enough on it. Some other issues facing Vanguard. One is, how do they grow overseas? They've kind of been pulling back from different markets, particularly in China and Asia and Europe, and they seem to be focusing a bit more on Latin America lately. But it's kind of that, all right, we've already taken, call it 20, 25% of market share in the US. What's next? Where else can we grow? And so that's going to be an issue facing Vanguard. ESG, or social responsible investing, or whatever we're calling it these days, is also an issue for Vanguard, as they're getting pressure, as I said earlier, from both sides. And that'll be something for the next CEO to contend with. And maybe the last one I'd point to is just transparency. Vanguard loves to talk about how they are owned by the investors in their mutual funds and their ETFs, and how that confers a lot of benefits. And it has played through into lower costs and Vanguard being that low-cost leader. And I do think that does mean that they're more closely aligned with the investors in the funds than some other companies out there. But Vanguard still operates as a private company. As an owner, I don't get a sense of, what does Tim Buckley earn as CEO? Whereas I can go Google and see that Larry Fink pulled down, $25 million 1 year. So again, there's kind of this increasing sense of wanting transparency on Vanguard, I think. People looking for a little bit more than just, okay, you've given me the low cost, that's great, but I can get that other places. So what else am I getting? I think is something that people are asking about more.
Jeff, you're is probably as close as you can get to in being an insider at Vanguard without actually working at Vanguard. What, and you mentioned ESG a minute ago, what are your thoughts on Vanguard's move away from the net zero asset managers climate accord? Well, that happened under Buckley's leadership, but what is Vanguard trying to do with regard to ESG? I know it's got a little bit of a stigma attached to it now. ESG does. It's become politicized, and some companies have even stopped using those three letters when describing things that relate to maybe sustainability or environmentally conscious investing or impact investing. Can you talk specifically about where Vanguard is and maybe where they're heading with regard to ESG?
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly the pendulum swings in both directions on ESG and impact investing, kind of for and against it. Where I think Vanguard would like to be is they would like to be Switzerland. They would like to be neutral on the topic, and they would like to say, we just give investors choice. And they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place on this. Again, they're getting pressure on both sides. One side of the argument is saying, you have too much voting power with these companies, and you're exerting too much control or influence in a direction that we don't like. And then the other side of the spectrum is saying, you're not doing enough with your quote unquote power or influence with these companies. And I don't know, maybe the answer is both. Maybe we don't know what conversations Vanguard is having one on one with these companies. Vanguard is working on giving investors more control when it comes to how the shares of the individual companies are voted. They've been running some pilot programs with proxy voting. And I think that's a clear step in Vanguard wanting to kind of push down some of that responsibility to vote shares onto other investors and to be able to step back from that responsibility. And again, like I said, I think they just want to say we offer investors choice. We offer some cap-weighted ETFs, kind of your traditional index mutual fund ETF. We also offer some ESG flavors of that if you want to use them, or we offer some factor ETFs if you want to pursue that. And again, they just want to be able to sit back and say, we give investors choice and the lowest cost we possibly can.
Jeff, do you have any take on, what Vanguard's approach to active is going to be going forward? Obviously, they're kind of synonymous with index fund investing. They've dabbled, a little bit in active here and there, but do you think, they're ever going to, change their approach to that, especially in the ETF world, and launch, more active ETFs?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the hole in maybe Vanguard's lineup, or maybe I can think of a few holes, but maybe the biggest hole in Vanguard's lineup is on the active ETF space. I mean, Vanguard has around $1 trillion in actively managed funds, so they're actually really big in that space. Now, granted, on the equity side, that tends to mostly be partnering with sub-advisors. On the fixed income side, it's actually mostly in-house. And they've launched a few active ETFs on the fixed income side. So they're core bond, core plus bond. They launched ETF versions of those recently. The ultra short, kind of your next step out from money market like fund, they've launched some active stuff there. But clearly on the equity side of the spectrum, they have not stepped into that space at all. And I think that's one place that we might see them try to expand. I think part of what they have to really get their heads around is getting their sub-advisor partners on board with it as well.
Now, Jeff, we can't have you on the podcast and not talk about spot Bitcoin ETFs. Obviously, Vanguard took a lot of heat for not allowing spot Bitcoin ETFs to be bought by its brokerage customers. That heat obviously coming from people who are very supportive of crypto. Do you think that move, you know, to block these ETFs could backfire on them?
I mean, between ESG and spot Bitcoin, you guys are trying to get me in trouble here, I think. Yes, of course, it could backfire on them. You know, if we step back and just think about kind of three possible paths that this could follow, there's the one where, yeah, Vanguard looks really silly on this, and Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies take off and kind of fulfill all the potential that people see in this space. And Vanguard will, you know, at least miss the initial wave and then have to pull this big mea culpa and figure out how to play catch up. That's one scenario. The complete other side is that Vanguard comes out looking super smart. And that's where, you know, all the naysayers are right and Bitcoin implodes and, you know, either goes to zero or just kind of fades into obscurity. Vanguard's going to look really good in that world, right? They're going to say, oh man, like BlackRock, Fidelity, they were just out to sell me the latest thing and charge me an expense ratio. But hey, look, Vanguard really cared about me. So that could happen. There's a third world too, though, where this is kind of just a lot of noise and Bitcoin continues to exist as that digital gold, but the rest of the crypto space kind of never really takes off or matures to the point where it's in more ETFs and it's really just kind of a Bitcoin kind of game. And I don't know, Vanguard probably looks fine in that space. I mean, they don't, under that world, they eventually maybe backtrack and allow trading of Bitcoin ETFs, kind of like you can buy you know, gold ETFs on Vanguard's platform today. But at the same time, Vanguard probably doesn't, you know, totally miss a wave there. I'm not, I guess, smart enough to know which of those three worlds is the one we're going to live in 5, 10, 15 years. But those are kind of the three outcomes that I see when I look ahead to it. So one looks really bad for Vanguard, one looks great, and one looks kind of fine.
And this isn't that uncharacteristic of Vanguard, right, Jeff? If I'm not mistaken, they stopped allowing leverage and inverse ETFs to be traded on the platform, right? And, you know, this is kind of the same thing, wouldn't you say?
Exactly. This is kind of business as usual. You're right, Vanguard blocked leverage ETFs several years ago on their platform. It's kind of their, they've always had a little bit of this, for lack of a better term, kind of an anti-state approach, where they kind of say, hey, if we don't think this is appropriate for investors, we're willing to block it. And if you want to trade it or speculate, feel free to go do that somewhere else. And look, this is clearly going to turn off some investors. If we're going to be stereotypical, that means your younger investors. But also, I think it's worth mentioning that for the most part, the crypto crowd was probably not on Vanguard's platform anyways. And sure, some people might say, hey, I'm leaving because you're taking away choice from me. But again, as you said in the question, Vanguard's taken away choice in other places as well. So this isn't necessarily anything new for Vanguard.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Jeff, actually, in one of our staff meetings at ETF.com about this was not an audience that was probably populating Vanguard in a big way anyway. But it does draw a line, at least for now, for people that are on Vanguard's platform and might want to test out these new, even if you were reluctant to embrace Bitcoin in its various ways, once it's an ETF, a spot ETF, you could you might have people on the platform that might say, yeah, I wasn't thinking about it, but I'm going to watch it. Maybe I'll put a little money into it. Well, now they can't do that. And it's hard to say. I know you've already kind of said this, but it's hard to say when or if Vanguard will ever change its tune on the spot Bitcoin topic.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's going to be interesting. I've pointed out in the past about Vanguard's kind of inconsistency when it comes to the Bitcoin and ETFs. I'm not sure why it took a spot Bitcoin ETF for Vanguard to block all crypto related products. I mean, before the spot ETFs launched, you could buy the futures based. So maybe it was just the, you know, amount of public news and awareness around the spot Bitcoin ETFs that raised the issue for Vanguard to really take that step. But yeah, and look, it all depends. You want everything in one place? Are you willing to say, okay, I'm going to the person you're describing who wants to dabble a little bit, to say, okay, I'm going to keep, you know, whatever this money in my Vanguard account. And that's my long-term investment account. And then I'm going to go open up my, whatever, pick your platform, Schwab, Robinhood, E-Trade, I don't know, and go do your crypto and your ETFs on a side account and kind of separate it out. That might appeal to some people to at least not just have it as a mental bucket, but actual kind of physical buckets with different logins and usernames and passwords.
Great stuff, Jeff. Really appreciate your time. And, you know, you gave us a ton of great insight. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can find this and all other Exchange Traded Fridays episodes on ETF.com or on any major podcast platform. See you next week.